we're holding on page 116 in Tainus Oslamed Zayin. The Gemara has a discussion about the concept of Tainus Shores, the fasting only for part of a day. So in that connection, the Gemara brings Ma'ukva Ikla the Ginzek. Ma'ukva, one of the Amoraim, one time visited Ginzek, which is a city in Modai. Nowadays it no longer exists, but whatever the area where it was is in northwestern Iran. Anyway, Bomine, so they asked him several questions. Here in Ein Yaakov that leaves out in the Gemara, they mentioned that they asked him three questions, two in Halacha and one in Agadta, and the first one they asked him in Halacha is about whether it's possible to fast the Tainus Shores, which is how it comes in over here. The second one had to do with Yain Nesach, and in fact this discussion is also brought in Masechet Avodah Zarah for that reason. Anyway, here in Ein Yaakov it mentions only the third. Tainus Shores, to fast for a few hours in a day, is such a thing a valid concept.
Whether it counts
as a fast for Fali. So, but here in Ein Yaakov mentioned only the third one. The Meshimish Moshe called Shivasimea Miluim. What did Moshe wear when he served in the Mishkan during the 7 days of Miluim? Aaron and his sons at that point are not the Kohenim yet. They wore the big kahuna during those days, and they're sort of practicing the avodah. But Moshe is functioning as the Kohen Gadol. We never find where it says he wore the big kahuna. So what was he wearing during that time? Loi havei biyadei. So he didn't know the answers to any of these three questions. Rashi, by the way, over here brings a girsa that's not ma'ukva but rather Rabbi Akiva. But Rashi says that's not really possible. First of all, how would Rabbi Akiva not know the answers to such things? Rabbi Akiva, Mela Ma'ukva, okay, he's one of the Amoraim, but he's not the greatest of them or anything. So you could say he didn't know something about Rabbi Akiva. You're going to say he didn't know such things. Second of all, Rashi says that if it was Rabbi Akiva, it wouldn't be told in a style of a story in the Gemara. Rather, it would be brought in the style of a Braisa, Tonon Abonon, or something like that, or Tanya, Pamachas, one time Rabbi Akiva came to Ginzak. Tosfos over there in Avodah Zarah points out that second one is not really such a question. We do find other episodes involving Tanoim that are told in the style of a story of the Gemara like this. But anyway, so Rashi prefers the Girsa Ma'ukva. Anyway, also Bashal Ben Medrasha. So Ma'ukva went and asked in the Beis Medrash. Omrulay, so they told him, so they gave him answers to the first two, which again are not here in Ein Yaakov. And as far as the third question about what Moshe wore when he was serving during the Shivas Ma'amiloyim, the Choluk Lavan. He was wearing a white robe. So not big the kahuna per se, but he was wearing a white robe. Rashi points out it wasn't going to be, even the Pashas were not going to assume that he wore Stam his regular clothes to do the Avodah and the Mishkan. So no, he wore a white robe. And Rav Kahana Masni b'cholok lovan sha'in la'imra. Rav Kahana added the detail, it was a white robe that had no imra. Now what is an imra? So Rashi over here explains that an imra means a hem. So what it means is, in other words, Rashi explains that this robe was woven all out of one piece. Usually a robe like that with sleeves would be woven out of several pieces that are then stitched together, and you have hems, and you have hems on the ends and where the parts are attached. Here Rashi says Moshe did not want to wear something that has hems or seams in it because people might suspect him of hiding money. As we find in Masechta Shkalim, when the person would go into the Lishka to take out the money that's going to be used for spending on the korbanos, on the other expenses of this mikdash, he would also, for the same reason, he wouldn't wear a robe that has a hem or anything like that, because the yisim nekiyim me'ashem me'yisrael. Now, Rashi in Masechta Avodah Zarah brings that explanation as well. However, there he says it doesn't really work, because by the time we're talking about over here, by the time Moshe is doing the Avodah in the Mishkan, it's long since been built. Mela, while it was being built, people might suspect him of misappropriating something. But after it's already built, there's nothing for him to take. So therefore, why would he have to avoid that during the time? So Tosfos over there actually gives several other explanations of what it means that it didn't have an Imra. One is that it means it didn't have, usually garments often have they have an edging, they have a border made out of some other material or fringes for decoration or whatever on the edges. Here, Moshe did not wear that, first of all, so people should realize that it's special made for this purpose. It's not something ordinary that he just decided to repurpose for the Mishkan. It also demonstrates that this way people should realize that it's only a temporary thing. It's not that Moshe is serving as Kohen Gadol and then Hashem decided he's disqualified and taking them away from it and giving them to Aaron. No, to begin with, it was only meant as a temporary thing. And then Tosfos brings another gusa over there. The word is not imra with an aleph, but rather amra with an ayin, which is the Aramaic word for wool. So it would mean, unlike the Bigdei Kohanim, which contained shatnez, they contained both linen and wool, the robe that Moshe wore for this purpose was all linen with no wool at all. So that's the idea. The Maharal talks about that it represents that the white represents simplicity, it represents pshitus, like the oneness of Hashem and so forth. There's a sicha where the Rebbe talks about that the idea is that it demonstrates, it actually brings it on a pasuk as well, that it demonstrates that Moshe's being a Kohen Gadol was not a separate thing, it's an outgrowth of his role as the teacher, as the bringer of the Torah to the Jewish people, and therefore in token of that, he wears this white garment rather than wearing Bigdei Kohanim. So again, Ma'ukva didn't know that. They told him in the Mishnah Medrash that this is what it was.
Also purity,
it represents purity. Yeah. Okay. At the end of the parak, it talks about you have the dinim about when they're davening during fast days and they're falling on their faces and saying tachnun and so forth. So the Gemara brings Amar Rav Elazar, this part we had in Megillah as well. Amar Rav Elazar, ein adam choshev rashoy lipol aponav, an important person is not allowed to fall on his face in public. LMK Nanak Yeshua ben Nun, unless he knows that he's going to be answered by Hashem right away, like Yeshua ben Nun. So Rashi over here explains the reason is because that way, if he doesn't get answered, then people are going to make fun of him. People are going to say that he's not worthy of being answered. Marshav brings another reason. Okay, that would explain. Fine, maybe it's not a good idea for him to do. Why ain't it Rashi? So Marshav brings from Yerushalmi, the reason is because then it'll cause a chilul Shema, it'll cause a chilul Hashem. People are going to think that he's a hypocrite, that he's only pretending to be a tzaddik, and he's really not. Marshal says another reason as well. The Gemara had said in the piece before this, which is in the Gemara, not here in Ein Yaakov, that when it comes to, there are certain things, a person always has to be careful to not act in a way of yuhara. A person has to act with Sinim Meshur Sadin and all that, but a person has to be careful not to act in a way that makes it look like he's holding himself higher than he really is. So if he were to fall on his face in public, and he's not the kind of person who's necessarily going to be answered by Hashem, it amounts to merci kiyura. It looks like he's holding himself higher than he is, as though he's of the caliber of Yeshua, for example. For this reason, by the way, even though we have, by Tachnun, it's called Nefilas Apayim, and properly speaking, it involves prostrating full length on the ground, nevertheless, we don't do that. Either we just put our arm on our shoulder. Among the reasons is based on this, because even the greatest tzaddik shouldn't be falling on his face on the ground in front of everybody. So, as we find by Yeshua, by Yehovah Hashem or Yeshua Kumloch, Hashem says to Yeshua, get up. This is after the surah. So they fought the battle of Yericho and destroyed the city, and everything from Yericho was supposed to go. It was either supposed to be destroyed or given to Hekdesh, and Achan took some of the spoils, and then when they next fought against the next city, the city of Ai, then the Jewish people were defeated, and Yeshua falls on his face, and they're ripping their clothes and so forth, and davening to Hashem, what's going on over here? And Hashem tells Yeshua, Kum Loch, get up. Why are you falling on your face? So the implication is, in other words, that Hashem listened to his tefillah. So there, and Hashem is telling him, get up, why are you falling on your face? You don't need to fall on your face anymore. I'll tell you what's going on and then how you can correct it. In Megillah, Rashi explains differently. Again, as we mentioned at the beginning of the Masechta, what's printed here is Pirush Rashi on Tainus may not actually be from Rashi. And we see there are so many places where he contradicts his own explanations in other places. Anyway, in Megillah, Rashi says the opposite. Since Hashem is telling Yeshua, why are you falling on your face? That implies even for Yeshua, he shouldn't have done that. Unless he knew that Hashem is going to answer him right away. Also, Rav Elazar says an important person is not allowed to wear sackcloth on his flesh, as people would do in those times, as an expression of tshuva and of sorrow and everything. Unless he's going to be answered by Hashem, like Yehoram ben Achav. Yehoram was one of the kings of the kingdom of the Aseret HaShevatim. He, like pretty much all those kings, was a Rosha. However, we find that he had a schus, he had a shtickle schus, and when he put on sackcloth, then Hashem answered him shortly after that. the story as it describes in Sefer Melachim. There was a siege of the capital city of Shomron going on at that time. There was a terrible famine in the city. People were reduced to eating garbage. And one day he's walking on top of the wall, and a woman complains to him, and she says the gist of her story is that we're reduced to cannibalism. People are eating their own children, like it foretells in the Torah and the Tosafot. And then the pasuk says that Yehoram, hearing that, ripped his clothes, and everybody saw that under his clothes he's wearing sackcloth. And shortly after that, he talks with the Navi, with Elisha, and Elisha tells him, Shimu Dvar Hashem, that very soon the siege is going to be over, and prices in Shomron will fall to very low prices. We have the story in that Torah of Parashas Metzora, Ba'abar Anoshim, Hayu Metzorayim, how the four Metzorayim discovered the camp of the Aramim abandoned, and everybody went and plundered the camp.
Unless a person is going to go on past experiences with Hashem and past communications, how is he going to know
what he's doing? And that's what I mean, whether he knows he's of the caliber of, Shanema, as the Pasuk said, Behi Kishmoy Amelach Zivra Isha, when the king heard the words of this woman, where she told him how they're down to eating their own children, by Yikras Godav, he ripped his clothing, Behu Over Alachoma, he's walking on top of the wall to see what's going on at the siege, by Yarhom, and everybody saw, Behina Sakal, Besori Miboyas, and there was sackcloth on his skin, inside, underneath his clothes, so for him to show off publicly that he's wearing sackcloth is only appropriate only if he's going to be answered right away, as in fact he was.
What does the word mibayos
mean? Mibayos means from the inside, meaning underneath his clothes, directly on his skin.
It's like the word for a house.
It is, the word of house is inside, right? The inside house is, yeah. So therefore the word bayis comes to mean inside more generally. So the Amr of Elazar, loy hakos. So now we're talking about falling on your face, and we're talking about ripping a person ripping his clothes, and both of those are ways of evoking Hashem's rachmin. But the Amr of Elazar, loy hakol benefil of loy hakol b'kriya. You should know, not everybody is going to be answered by Hashem by falling on their faces, and not everybody is going to be answered by ripping their clothes. Meaning, it depends on the caliber of the person. Moshe v'Aaron b'nefila, Yeshua v'kolid v'kriya. We find, for example, in the story of the Meraglim, that Moshe and Aaron fell on their faces and Hashem answered them, whereas Yeshua and Kolev, who are on a lesser level, they had to rip their clothes. Moshe v'Aaron b'nefila, Shenema v'yipa Moshe v'Aaron v'gomer. They fell on their faces when the people, when the Meraglim come back with their report and everybody's crying and saying, we can't go into Eretz Yisrael, etc. So the Pasuk says that Moshe and Aaron fell on their faces. Meanwhile, Yeshua v'kolev v'kriya d'chdiv, as the Pesuk in there say, v'Yeshua b'nun v'cholev b'nyifunim, and atorim es ha'aretz. They, among the Meraglim, korul b'gdehem, they ripped their clothes. So the implication is, in other words, that Moshe and Aaron, being on a higher level, they could be answered just by falling on their faces in front of Hashem. Whereas Yeshua and Kolev, being on a lesser level, they had to resort to ripping their clothes. That's the point of Rashi. First let's finish the Gemara, and then we'll see. Mask for Rav Zera, but Rav Zera questions that. The Tamer of Shmuel ben Achmeni, some said of Shmuel ben Achmeni questioned that. E have a Ksiv Yehoshua. If after the Pasuk describes that Moshe and Aaron fell on their faces, if the next Pasuk says, Yehoshua and Kolev, without a Vav, ripped their clothes, then it would be correct, as you're saying, that Yehoshua and Kolev only ripped their clothes and did not fall on their faces. But since the pasuk ties it together with a vav, that means ha v'ha avod, then we can assume, says Reb Zera, Gishmo Manachmeni, that Yeshua and Kolev did both. They fell on their faces and they ripped their clothes. Now, Marsha learns differently than Rashi. What it means is, so again, Rashi is saying it means that there are some people who are going to be answered by Hashem just by falling on their faces. And then there are other people who are going to be answered by ripping their clothes. And now, so first we thought that Yeshua and Kolev only ripped their clothes, and now Reb Zera and Shmuel ben Achmeni are saying that actually they had to do both. Marsha says that actually no. What it is like this. We said before, Marsha explained the reason why, again, what's one reason why an Adam Choshev should not fall on his face, the Tzibur, unless he knows that Hashem is going to answer him. One reason, Marsha said, because Mechzi Kiyuara looks like he's holding himself higher than he really is. Well, the same thing applies to ripping his clothing. So you have Yeshua and Kolev being on a lower level than Moshe and Aaron. If they were to just fall on their faces in front of the Tzibur, it would look like they're putting themselves on the same level as Moshe and Aaron, and that's not appropriate, and therefore instead they rip their clothes. But in fact, then Reb Zera or Reb Shmuel ben Achmeni points out that no, not really, actually, it actually was both. They actually did both. They had to rip their clothes, but they also had to fall on their faces, and only then were they answered. Marsha also points out, by the way, in the story with Ai, we're seeing that Yehoshua was answered by falling on his face. Why here? By the story of the Meraglim, I was saying that he had to rip his clothes instead of, or in addition to that, and Marsha says, the difference is here, in the time of the Meraglim, Yehoshua was not yet the leader. By the time it came to the story of Ai, he's already the leader of the Jewish people. Yeah, then he's of the caliber to be answered only by falling on his face. But before that, I just said before, they'd fought against Yerushalayim, Elchanan had taken some of the spoils, then when they went and fought against Ai, they were defeated, and 36 Jews were killed, and Yeshua and everybody are in a panic, and they're tearing their clothes, and then davening before, and falling on their faces before Hashem, and saying, what's going on, how are we ever going to conquer the Canaan if you're not helping us? And Hashem tells him, the fact is, somebody took from the Chedim, and you have to find out, somebody took from the banned object, and you have to find him, and execute him, and get rid of those objects, and then the Shekhinah will return to the Jewish people. Yeah. Okay. Since we're mentioning this kind of idea that you have some people are answered with one thing and some with another, so Rabbi Elazar continues with the same kind of expression as far as some other things. Not everybody, when it comes to Osid Lava, when it talks about people, the important people, rulers who are going to be showing honor to the Jewish people, not all of them are going to be standing, and not all of them are going to be bowing. There are going to be different groups, some of whom are going to be standing in honor of the Jewish people, and others who are going to be bowing. The Goyish kings will be standing out of respect for the Jews, loss of love. The Sarim, the princes, the noblemen, the lower level, the lower level people, they will be the Ishtachavoya, they're going to be bound. How do we know this? Malachim Bekima, Shenema, the Pasuk says, Koya Amar Hashem, so says Hashem, Goyo Yisrael, the one who redeems the Jewish people, Kedoshai, the holy one of the Jewish people, he says, Livzoi Nefesh V'Goymer, to the nation whose lives were scorned throughout all the time of Golos, the Goyim have scorned Jewish lives and thought that they're not even worth anything, and the passage continues with several other expressions in that vein. Anyway, Malachim Yiru V'Komu, there's going to come a time, the Navi says, the kings will see Jewish people and they'll stand up. The Sarim, the Ishtachavoya, and the king and the princes will bow. Shenema, as the passage continues, Sarim, the Ishtachavu, the princes, and they will bow. So we see the kings are going to be doing one form of honor, by one form of obeisance, by standing up, and the Sarim, the ministers and whatnot, are going to be doing a different form by bowing. Again, Maskef for Reb Zeira v'Yitem Reb Shmuel Ben Nachmeni, but Reb Zeira Reb Shmuel Ben Nachmeni has the same question as before. Iksiv Yishtachavu k'dekam minan. If it said Sorim Yishtachavu, then fine. That would mean, it would mean that the Melachim are going to be doing one thing and the Sorim are going to be doing something else. Bahashir Yitziv V'Yishtachavu, but when it ties it together with a Vav, means Ha-Va-Ha-Avud, means they're going to be doing both. So it can mean the kings, it can mean both the kings and the princes are going to be doing both, or it can mean that the princes are going to be doing both. First they're going to be standing, and then they're going to be bowing. Marsha says, in keeping with his explanation before, that for the first explanation is that the Rav Elazar is saying the kings don't have to abase themselves, they don't have to be mavaza themselves to the extent of bowing. It's enough that they stand up in honor of the Jews, and that'll be the honor that they show. Meanwhile, the Sarim, who are not so important, if they just stand, then that would be, again, merci qui you are. It looks like they're acting like big shots, like we're on the levels of the kings, and therefore they're going to have to bow. But then Reb Zeira, Reb Shmuel Ben Nachmeni, is saying that not necessarily they're going to actually have to do both. Well, you have to stand up in order to bow, but the point is, in other words, they're going to stand up specifically in honor of the Jews, and then they're going to bow in honor of the Jews. And it's worth mentioning, by the way, in this connection, a beautiful medrash on this pasuk. Here the pasuk is making the contrast. Again, the Jewish people up until now were Livzoi Nefesh, the one that the Goyim scorned their lives, Livzoi of Goy, the ones who, the pasuk continues, the ones that the Goyim considered them abhorrent and disgusting and so forth. So the medrash tells a beautiful mashal about that. One time there was a city where they had a bathhouse, and they had a wooden flooring in the bathhouse, and everybody is always stepping on this wooden floor. It's the floor of the bathhouse. It's like nothing important. One day the king says that the king is going to be visiting town. They need to put up in honor of the king. They need to put up a display with the king's image. So they need a good piece of wood for that. They realize the best piece of wood for that is this flooring in the bathhouse. So they take that out and they carve the king's image on it. Now all the ministers and the princes and the this and that are coming and bowing down to it. And like the people are saying, what, you know, last week this thing was the floor of the bathhouse and now we're all bowing to it. And they realize, of course, not because the piece of wood is no different than it was before, but now it has the king's image on it. So of course it's a whole different Metzius. So the same way the Medrash says, like the people of Gog and Magog's army and that type, those types are going to be saying, till now we've been doing the most horrible, vicious things to the Jewish people, and now all of a sudden we're bowing to them. What we realize is not so much the Jewish people themselves, it's because now we realize the name of Hashem is on the Jewish people, like the king's image on that piece of wood.
That reminds me, like in Halloween, we say the stone that was, despised, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Evan Mossad, but Spina, yeah, it expresses the same idea. They thought that they were unnecessary for the world, and it turns out we're the cornerstone of the whole world, yeah. Omer of Nachman Yitzchak, Af Onu Noimar, Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, here's another one that we can say in the same vein when you have a pasuk that makes a contrast between two different groups. Loi HaKol La'ur of Loi HaKol La'Simcha. Not everybody is going to have oro, which is light, and not everybody is going to have simcha, which is happiness. There's going to be two different groups. Some are going to have one, and some are going to have the other. Tzaddikim la'oro v'yesharim la'simcha. The tzaddikim will have light, and the yesharim, Rashi learns that the yesharim are on a higher level than the tzaddikim. So they will be zoicha, not only to oro, but they will be zoicha instead to simcha. Tzaddikim la'oro shenema urzaru ala tzaddik. Light is planted for the tzaddik. Yisharim l'simcha, and the Yisharim will be zoicha to simcha. Dichtiv, as the pasuk continues, will be Yisrei leiv simcha. So that's according to Rashi, that the tzaddikim are the lower level, and the Yisharim are higher than that. The Rashba learns the other way around. The Rashba learns that it means the other way around. The Yisharim are on a lower level than the tzaddikim. The Yisharim are going to be zoicha to simcha. The tzaddikim, who are on a higher level than them, are going to be zoicha to ora, which the Rashba says is ikra taim. And kol shekin, he says, all the more so, they will be zoicha to simcha, which is the cause of that taim. So the other way around. They will be zoicha to the ur, and from that, they will be zoicha to the simcha, because the simcha is like an outgrowth of the ur. So that's what he says. Urza ruala tzaddik. Simcha tzaddik and Hashem. Fine. So that's the point, because he says they're going to have the ura and they're going to have. So that's the thing. He's understanding. Yeah, so he's saying once you have that simcha, then simcha tzaddik and Hashem. Yeah. Yeah.
He said it's the higher level.
He says that the tzaddikim are higher than the yeshar. So therefore, so the tzaddikim, he says. So that's what I'm saying. So he would explain then that once tzaddikim have the ur, and from the ur, from that you get simcha, therefore it's simcha tzaddikim b'ashem. But he doesn't actually explain that possibly, but maybe that's what he would say. Mao Shah adds that actually, like this one, he's saying davening, the fee is shorim to sremu, the tzaddikim to svarich, etc., and you're going to higher and higher levels. So that's also mashma, that the tzaddikim are higher than the yeshorim. And then he also adds that, so first of all, actually, like this, Tosfos points out, now with the previous two, with the falling on the face and ripping the clothing, and with the kings standing up and bowing, we said that actually because you have a vav in there, it means both. It means they're going to be doing both. Well, what about you in the pasuk? Urzarul atzadik ul yishrei leiv simcha. Why don't we have Reb Zeira or Reb Shmuel ben Achmeni also pointing out that you should have that, it means that they're going to have both. So Tosfos says the difference is because since you have like, Tzaddik and Yishrei Lev right next to each other in the pasuk without any other words between them, necessarily it has to mean each one is separate. Otherwise, the pasuk could have just said, or the simcha zerul atzaddik v'la yishorin. Since you have, because it mentions the tzaddik and the yosher, it's true it has a vav between them, but nevertheless, it has to mean that they're separate. Otherwise, it would have just said that and simcha are for both of them. In the other psukim, on the other hand, you have, and in the pasuk about Melochim Yirav Akamu, you have those several words between Melochim and Sarim. Therefore, we can understand that it means that the Akamu goes on both, and the Yishachvu goes on both.
Means the straight ones, right?
Yes.
So Rashi explains
that the Yeshorim are higher than the Tzaddikim. Yeah, the Rashba and Marsha say the other way around, that the Tzaddikim are higher than the Yeshorim. Yeah. Anyway.
Oh,
that depends how you look at it. So Maharal Shor also adds, means tainug ruch, means a spiritual pleasure. Simcha means a physical pleasure. So therefore, the tzaddik is zoicha to the ruchniestic pleasure. or Zeruah, it's planted, just like you plant a seed and it grows bigger and bigger, the same way that Tzaddik is gaining greater and greater awareness of Hashem's Shechina, of the Ziv Hashechina all the time. The Yesharim, who again, according to the Rashba, are on a lower level than Tzaddikim, they're not Zeucha to that but they are Zeucha to the Simcha, the physical pleasure of La'asid Lover. Say the Taniyas Perek Sheni. So now that we've now, in the first Perek, it talked about you have a series of fasts that are done if there's no rain after a period of time. So first they have the Yechidim, the Tamid HaChamim fast, then you have three fasts on the Tzibur, then another three fasts that are more severe, then another seven that are the most severe of all. So now when it comes to that last group of fasts, so the Mishnah is going to describe the order of how they would daven on those fast days. So Machlokas Rishonim, by the way, whether the description that we have here applies specifically if there's a drought or also for other kinds of tzaras. So it happens sometimes, unfortunately, that there are droughts in Eretz HaKodesh. The whole detail of what's described over here, it doesn't seem they do nowadays. It is mentioned in the Tur, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, but I'm not sure if they actually do this whole Seder. I don't think they actually do this whole Seder nowadays.
They didn't do it on October 7th, but then it was simple, so then they probably...
Again, you have Rishonim who say that specifically for drafts, but yeah. Anyway, the Mishnah says, Seder Tanias Ketzad, what is the order of the fasts, specifically again of the last seven fasts? Motzien es ha-teva l'rechoy v'shalir. They bring out the teva into the city square. The teva is the, so some Rishonim learn that it means the, literally the word teva means a box. So somebody showed him learn that it means the box in which they would keep the Sifrei Torah. In those times, they didn't always have an Arden Kodesh built into the shul wall like we have. Instead, they would have a niche in the wall, and they would bring a Sefer Torah from somebody's house or wherever it was stored, and they'd put in a box inside the shul, or actually the bachelor slightly differently. They would have a box in front of the chazan, which would contain some of the Sefer Torah, and meanwhile, the rest of them were in the Arden. So according to that, that's the teva. And then Yeshomim, that the teva over here means the bima on which they lay from each other. Whatever, they bring that out to the city square. And the Gemara later on is going to explain all these details. Why are they bringing out the teva to Rechoy V'Shalir? And why are they doing each of the details that it says here in the Mishnah? The bottom line is, each of them is meant to evoke feelings by people that this is a very serious situation, and therefore we have to plead with the Eved Shtifer Rachim. Anyway, the Noisin Ephraim Mikla, they would put burnt ashes, al gabe ateva, on the teva, over Rosh HaNosi, and on the head of the Nosi, of the Sanhedrin, over Rosh HaBestin, and on the head of the Avbestin, v'chol echad v'echad, Noisin Berosha, everybody else would take some of the ashes and put them on their own heads. So in other words, the implication is, the Mishnah is saying, somebody else would place them on the heads of the Nosi and the Abbasin, everybody else would do it for themselves. Again, the Gemara eventually is going to explain, we'll get to, Be'ez Hashem, why it was like that, why didn't the Nosi and the Abbasin put it on their own heads. Tosfos, by the way, makes a point that the idea behind the ashes is to, the Gemara explains, is to evoke Akedas Yitzchak, to evoke the schus of Akedas Yitzchak. The Tosfos actually brings an interesting idea that these ashes weren't stam ashes; they were actually ashes of human remains that had been burnt, and that way they have fragments of bone mixed in with them, and that way they evoke much more Akedas Yitzchak, where Yitzchak would have been brought as a korban and burnt if it hadn't been that the Eved told Avraham not to. A couple of Achronim wonder about that. I mean, since when are you allowed to burn human remains? You have to treat them respectfully and bury them. So how are you even going to have such ashes? But whatever, that's what Tosfos says.
Many people have the pasuk and put it on the pasuk. They put it actually.
That's something else. The Gemara mentioned in Baba Basra. That's something else. That's as a memory of those to remember the Churban of the Churban Beis Hamikdash. The Gemara mentions in Baba Basra that yes, they do that. This is something else. This is to remember Akedas Yitzchak, and that we should feel like we're like ashes and nothing in front of Hashem. Rashi, by the way, makes the point. The reason why the Mishnah has to say the word mitla, Afer by itself means ashes. Why add the word mitla? The point is because you have two very similar words in Lashon Kodesh. You have the word Afer, which means ashes, and then you have the word Ofer, which means dust. So if it just said afer, you would think that it could mean dust as well. Sometimes we find the words afer and offer used interchangeably. The ashes of Parah Adoma, for example, are called afar sreifas achatas. And you have other examples like that where the two words are a little bit interchangeable. By adding the word mikla, it makes it clear we mean actual ashes. If the pieces of bone are smaller than a seorah, then yeah, they're not matana, yeah. Are smaller than the size of a barley grain. Continues the Mishnah, Hazokin Shebehen, the eldest or the greatest Talmud Chacham among them, He says in front of the Dibre Kibushin. Dibre Kibushin, Rashi gives two explanations. One is that the word kibushin comes from the word that means, from a word that means to press. So these are things that press on people's hearts and make them realize that they really have to do tshuva. The other explanation is, well, Rashi doesn't give the second explanation. Other mafoshim give a different explanation, that kibushin also means that it comes from a word for things that are hidden. It means that he tells them things that you should realize that Hashem knows the hidden things you've done as well, and therefore you have to do tshuva. Anyway, he would tell them, for example, Achenu, he'd say, our brothers, when the people of Nineveh did tshuva. Now they did, they put on sackcloth, they were fasting, but in the end it doesn't say Hashem saw their sackcloth and their fasting and therefore he overturned the gzera. Ella, what does the pasuk actually say? Hashem saw their deeds, that they had returned from, that they had done tshuva from the evil ways. So in other words, he's stressing to them, don't think it's just the chitzonius of fasting and wearing sackcloth and ashes and whatnot that's going to evoke Hashem's wrath. It's tshuva that's going to do it. Over Kabbalah, and he continues in Kabbalah, which means in books of Nevi'im, it also says, tear your clothes, not your hearts. Tear your hearts, not your clothes. In other words, tear your hearts and rip out the ra that's in it and do tshuva rather than tearing your clothes. In other words, tearing the clothes of lesser importance. It also means if kiru levavchem, you won't need to kiru bigdechem. You won't need to tear your clothes because then the Eved won't bring zeilus in the first place. So we tell it, why are we calling this part Kabbalah? The word Dibre Kabbalah is a word for, is a nickname for words of Navi. Rashi explains the difference is that Dibre Kabbalah are called the ones where the Navi directly speaks to the Jewish people, as here, Yoriel was speaking to the people in the time of the plague of locusts that they had, that we learned about in the previous parak, and he was telling them this plus Kiru Levan from Babak Dechen. As opposed to Yonah, the Navi is not telling the people. This is the plus narrating what happened. Therefore, it doesn't as much deserve the word Dibre Kabbalah. Other Mephoshim explain that the word Kabbalah in this context comes from an Aramaic word meaning to complain. Other, when a Navi speaks to the people, it can be called Dibre Kabbalah in the sense that he's complaining and telling the people what's wrong. Again, as opposed to with Yonah, where it's a narrative rather than what he's telling them directly. So it wouldn't be just this. The Rambam explains in Hilchos Taanis that it's not just he would say these canned words over here. He would say whatever else is necessary to arouse people to do tshuva, whatever would be appropriate at the time. As we learned about in the previous parak, we had a number of Amoraim who gave various reasons why Hashem holds back the rain. Some of those may have been part of speeches that were given on such occasions. Anyway, the point is to arouse everybody to tshuva. In this connection, by the way, with the torn hearts and torn clothing, there's a story told about that, about a Mendel Horodoker, that one time he was asked what he accomplished while he was in White Russia in that area of teaching people about Torah and Tshuva and all. He said, I came there and I found there were ripped clothing and whole hearts, and I left them the other way around with ripped hearts and whole clothing. In other words, he improved their situation in Gashmius and he taught them to break their hearts in Tshuva and in Mice and Tovim before. Continues the Mishnah. Omdu b'tefillah. So now they stand up and they're going to start davening. Who do they choose as chazan? Meridin lefnat teva. They bring down before the teva. The chazan often stands on a lower place than everybody else, which is why it's called meridin. Zokin, a person who's old. The Rogil, because when he's old, for one thing, it means people will look up to him more. The Rogil, and he's accustomed to the words of davening. Keep in mind, back then, they didn't have Sidurim. They didn't have even written Sidurim, let alone printed ones. So a person had to know davening by heart, so he has to be Rogil. Rashi points out, based on a Gemara and based on a Mishnah and Brachas, that when a chazan is davening by the Omur, if his words flow smoothly, then you know Hashem is accepting his tefillah. And if he stumbles over the words, then you know it's not. So here, you want a good simon for everybody. The Eved is listening to their tefillahs, so you want to make sure to have somebody who's rugged. The Yesh Leibonim, he has children, Uvesei Reitham, and his house is empty. Now, empty can mean two things. On the face of it, it means he has lots of children, and his house is empty, and he doesn't have enough to be able to give them food. So that way, his heart will be more broken, and that way he'll daven more sincerely. Later on, the Gemara gives a different explanation, that it means that his household, that he and the members of his household, are empty of aveis. So he's a tzaddik, so therefore he deserves that he's the type of person that Hashem will listen to his tefillahs. Anyway, but umalafnu kadeshi libra shalom b'tefila, so that his heart is complete and as wholehearted as possible when he's down. But umalafnu esrim va'abar brachos. He says them when he davens over there with tzibur, he says 24 brachos. Yud ches shebachol yom, the regular 18, which originally was 18, and later on they added the lamashinim. Or most of all, an oid shich, and then he adds an extra 6 brachos. The 6 brachos are added between re'eh and refa'enu, which is why we have now, when the chazan says amenu, that's why he says it at that point, between re'eh and refa'enu, between goyel yisrael and refa'enu, because that's the same place where the chazan would recite the extra 6 brachos.
That's davening on the young people, no?
So it's actually like davening on Rosh Hashanah. In fact, by the way, the tour based on earlier Ga'onim and Rishonim explains here the Mishnah is going to give us a bare outline of what these 6 brachas are. But the tour brings a whole long nusach that they would say. First of all, he mentions that in Shachris, before they even get to Shemana Esrei, they add a whole bunch of Kapitlach Tilim, like we do on Shabbos and Yom Tov morning, but even more so, and they say, and various other things. And then when they come to here, he says they don't just say the bare bones that we're saying over here in the Mishnah, they're adding a lot more. They're adding a whole nuschois of pleas to Hashem to help them. Anyway, the Evohains, the 6 brachas that he adds, the first one is Zichroinus, and the second one is Shokras. So just like on Rosh Hashanah, he says the brachas of Zichroinus and Shokras, with all the psukim Rashi says that we say on Rosh Hashanah. So again, with the Torah, when he brings this, he mentions, for example, that like this, in the end of Zichronis and the end of Shofaris on Rosh Hashanah, we evoke, we want the schos, we ask Hashem to remember us for good, and we ask that Hashem should remember the schos of the Shofar and of Matan Torah and of the Korbanos to hear out of Tainus Tzibur, we say appropriate passages that are appropriate for the occasion when there's a drought or whatever tzara there is, that Hashem should have Rachmanos on us and the schos of these things. Then the next bracha is based on the pasuk El Hashem Batzarosli Korosi Ve'Aneni. He says the kapitel Chuf. No, so he says the entire kapitel, and again the tour adds. He says a lot else as well. In other words, so far we have 2 extra brachas. He says the entire Zechronis, the entire Shofaris with appropriate phrases for Tainus. Then the third extra bracha is the centerpiece of it is the kapitel El Hashem Batzarosli Korosi Ve'Aneni kapitel Chuf Chaf, and then it's surrounded by all kinds of other tefillos and piyutim and whatever to make a complete bracha. The end of the bracha, the mission is going to do. The end of the bracha, the mission will describe further on what the end of the one is. The next one is Esa in Alaharim. He then continues. The next bracha is centered around kapitel Chuf Chaf Aleph. The next bracha is based on Ma'amakim Krosich Hashem, that's the Pedokuf Lamed. And the last one, on Tefillah Va'onichiyato, a Tefillah by the poor person when he's fainting. Each of these kapitlach is appropriate to the occasion, and therefore, so again, each bracha is based on this kapitel, and it includes many other expressions and statements and piyutim and whatnot that Hashem should answer us in the schos of that. Rabbi Yehuda says, you don't say Zechronis and Shofaris, because those are for Rosh Hashanah and for Yom Kippur of Yovel. They don't belong now. Rather, instead of them, he says the two other sections that he says are the first 2 brachas. The first one is based on Pesukim from Melachim, Rav Kiya Ba'aretz Dever Kiya, part of Shlomo's Tefillah by the Chanukah Sabayis, where he asks that whenever there are tzaris, that people come, personal tzaris, national tzaris, whatever, people come and daven in the Bais HaMikdash, and Hashem should answer them. So he mentions, as an example, suppose that there's a famine or a dever, then people come to the Bais HaMikdash, and Hashem listens to their tefillahs. So Rabbi Yehuda says, instead of Zechronis, they say a bracha centered around those Pesukim. And another one, Asher Hoyod Var Hashem or Yirmiyahu Al Divrei Abatzaris, you have a tefillah that Yirmiyahu says, and then say for Yirmiyahu, Perek Yodalo, the first few psukim, where he's pleading with Hashem at a time when there were batzaris. The simple meaning of batzaris means droughts. Mind you, there are some foreshim over there on the pasuk who explain that batzaris over there means a siege, but here the Gemara is taking it, the pashto, the Mishnah is taking it, the pashto, in the sense of a batzaris, a drought. So there was a tefillah that Yirmiyahu said over there. So again, we center the according to Rabbi Yehuda, we center the tefillah around that bro. By the way, in the Torah, when it mentions these dinim, he says, so the halacha is like the Tanakhama, we do say Zechronis and Shofaris, but when it comes to the Kriyas HaTorah that they do afterwards, special Kriyas HaTorah, for this kind of tiny sibber, then he says the HaTorah is this section from Yirmiyahu, Al-Divrei HaBatzaris. So we'll continue tomorrow. Be'ez Hashem, the Mishnah continues with the ends of each of the respective brachas, and we have the fascinating and beautiful explanations from Marsha that we'll talk about Be'ez Hashem at length tomorrow about how these kapitlach are particularly appropriate for the occasion, and especially he has an explanation of kapitel kuf beis tefillah la'oni chiyata that talks about about how it's about the golus and everything will blow you away. So we'll have that tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. Okay. Yom Yen Mashiach Gola. Let's see, what is today? Yud Aleph Sivan. The Rebbe talked about how do we, in Vos Vashtet, how do we express this avodah of bring Mashiach to the Tenei B'Poyo Mamash? So, B'Pashtos, we add in Torah and Mitzvahs, we add in Limun HaTorah, and learning Nigla, and learning Pnimiyas HaTorah, and keeping Mitzvahs B'Hidur, and that includes, especially, the what's Hazman Groma now, during the summertime, is keeping the minhag of learning Pirkei Avos on the after Mincha and the Shabbos is between Pesach and Shavuos, and then continuing throughout the rest of the summer. So just all learning Pirkei Avos is bringing the Gola closer. Okay, to finish off over here, more of Hilchos Shabbos, finishing off the long Simen Pei that we've been on for quite a while. We talked about yesterday not folding clothes on Shabbos, which you're not again going to use on Shabbos. So by the same token, to make a bed on Shabbos for Motzei Shabbos, you can't do that even if there's time to sleep on it on Shabbos, but you're not planning to sleep on it. If you're planning to sleep on it again on Shabbos, then you can make it. But if you're not planning to and just you have time to, that's not reason enough because you're still preparing from Shabbos to weekday. On the other hand, the Alter Rebbe adds a detail. If the bed is in your living room or something, and it's going to be bizoyan, if it stays there unmade, then you're allowed to make it, because then it's covered Shabbos to have a made bed in your living room, but not when it's in your bed. Sure.